listening to In Other News on KNBA 90.3 FM, bringing you news and views from the teen perspective, the stuff that matters to us right from our mouths. In Other News is a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute.
Hi, you're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Leah Morgan Carroll.
And I'm Teddy Shanger.
Thank you for joining us today. We've got a great show for you. We haven't been live since May. It feels great to be back.
Yes, it does. Today, Max Young Rice interviewed a man who survived a bear attack. We'll have some music, and Leah Morgan Carroll has a story about human trafficking in Alaska, and we'll let you know about some events happening around town.
The first story of the show is from Max Young Rice. He interviewed Dan Bigley, who was attacked by a bear in 2003 while fishing with his friend. We'll be airing this in four parts throughout the show.
In the first part, Dan Bigley explains how his life was before the attack.
It was July 14th, 2003. You know, and I guess what strikes me as most significant about that time in my life is that it was at a time in my life where everything was going really, really well. Had a lot of success in moving here and kind of creating a pretty ideal life for myself, in the sense that I had found this great job working at Alaska Children's Services, taking kids out into the outdoors, teaching them healthy ways of living and coping. I had also, you know, really fallen in love with the backcountry ski terrain in the Chugach area. Had a nice place down in Girdwood, but also had just purchased a small little cabin up in Bear Valley, sort of at the top of the mountain up there. And then, lo and behold, Amber, this, you know, gorgeous girl from Minnesota, falls into my life. And so everything was really coming together quite well. And just the very next day, actually, after Amber and I had kind of taken our getting to know each other to the next level, you know, had plans to go out fishing. And so it was a sort of thing where, you know, we had spent the night kind of talking and kind of wrapped in each other's arms. And as I said goodbye, you know, I mentioned to her, hey, I'll call you tomorrow, or I'll call you later today when I get back from fishing. And of course, that was the phone call that never came. Essentially, it was one of those gorgeous days of fishing. We had spent, you know, far too long out there trying to catch our limit. But we finally did after dinner hours. And so we had just made the 20-minute walk back to the trailhead at the Grayling Trailhead near the confluence of the Russian and Kenai Rivers when my dog Maya, who I was with my dog Maya and my friend John, and she lets out just a little growl, just enough to make me look up and, you know, what's this? And sure enough, about 30 feet away or so was a pretty large grizzly bear. We've had plenty of grizzly encounters in the past. This one was atypical in the sense that she was very clearly agitated from the first point of encounter. She sort of whipped around to face us, was stomping her feet, hair raised on end, started huffing and puffing, and my friend John and I, you know, we conversed, decided the best thing to do was to sort of, you know, continue to make ourselves look big, back away, and really just walk the other way and take a really long way back around to the trailhead, hopefully basically just avoiding the bear altogether. So we had managed to back away successfully, and we're just starting to head upriver and finally starting to relax again, like, whew, that was crazy. When in front of us on the trail, the bushes started shaking. And that was definitely one of those heart-stopping moments where it felt like what had happened was we were being stalked by this bear. And so we quickly turned around and started heading back downriver towards where we had just come, the quickest way back to the trailhead. And we had gotten no more than 10 feet in that direction when suddenly in front of us, the grizzly sow comes ripping around the corner. So we're now faced with a charging bear who's darting at us at missile speed. My dog Maya leaps off the trail in one direction in front of me. My friend John leaps off the trail in another direction, and the bear doesn't change direction And I'm now the last object, you know, between her and the shaking bushes behind me. And so I leap off the trail into the bushes on the left. But before I had even hit the ground, she had a hold of me and was pulling me out.
You're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Teddy Shangin, and you just heard part one of Dan Bigley's encounter with a grizzly bear.
In parts two and three, Dan reveals more about the attack and his recovery.
In the first part, Dan Bigley explains how his life was before the attack.
I think it's time for some music. My name is Arena, and today I'm your DJ. First, you're going to hear This Isn't Love by Wisconsin band The Royal. You could have heard The Royal at Warped Tour, which is where they currently are touring. Next, you'll hear Primavera by Italian composer Ludovico Einaudi. And lastly, in this DJ block, you will hear I'm God by Clams Casino.
Get out of here.
Used to whisper, je t'adore. Now I've been with you, such a chore.
That's only because this isn't love, baby, but I wish it was.
You're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Leah Morgan Carroll. Thanks, Arena, for the music. We'll hear some more later in the show.
On their way to the river, they came across an aggravated bear. They tried avoiding it, and then it attacked Dan. In part two, we're back at the Russian River, and Dan isn't sure if he will survive.
My dog Maya, who I was with my dog Maya and my friend John, and she lets out just a little growl, just enough to make me look up and, you know, what's this? And sure enough, about 30 feet away or so was a pretty large grizzly bear. She then picked me up and dragged me off into the forest. And all I remember feeling was just the ground moving underneath me very quickly. And at some point, you know, I was kind of in and out of consciousness as she was moving me. And I never forget the feeling of sort of coming back to consciousness, waking up while the mauling is happening. And what struck me the most about those moments was the feeling of her front claws sort of pressing down on my shoulders as she stood over me. But also, I'll never forget the massive and powerful sound of her lungs and just the magnitude of her breath as she huffed and growled. And I heard my friend John calling from a distance loudly. And so I didn't know if there was a rescue underway or if they were searching for me actively. But I knew I'd been drug off the trail a ways, so I wanted them to know where I was. So I let out a call back. And in hindsight, that was a definite mistake because it was too much sign of life for the bear, who then quickly returned to me and delivered what I now refer to as sort of the death blow, which is where she, you know, cocked her head sideways and bit down across my face from side to side, really crushing a lot of the facial skeleton of the skull. I almost saw my body laying there on the forest floor, and then I was inside of my body, and I all of a sudden was hearing the sounds of the river and the wind in the trees and some chickadees at a distance. And it was like the presence of the peacefulness was back in the forest again. And it was very clear, as opposed to the several times before that when I'd come back to consciousness and the bear was still there. This time it was very obvious that the bear had gone.
You're listening to, in other news, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Teddy Changin. Max Young Rice interviews Dan Bigley about surviving a bear attack. We just heard Dan explaining the attack.
Next, we have some music for you.
Hey, it's your girl Sally Sweet Tunes. Next, up on this DJ block, you're going to hear The Compromise by The Format. You might have heard the lead singer of The Format and his new band called Fun. After that, we're going to hear Stuck in Love by William Beckett, who used to be in the band The Academy Is, which broke up in 2011. And lastly, you're going to hear See the Sun by British band The Kooks.
Crazy, I say, born rich, stay rich, there's no point taking chances. And me, I wouldn't call a sophomore son. I'd say I'm one step close to being just where I want to be. Away from the sea. Away from this machine.
This may be an afterthought, but after all the luck was gone, so was your interest in me. Well, I was suspicious and naive. It started with a simple kiss, blinded by your innocence. But I see clearer this time. The smoke in the mirror is starting to rise. Stuck in love with you. Take a look at what you got me into. The paralyzing truth is living even 1 minute without you is a moment I'd rather not have to live to see. Well, I'm stuck in love. I'm stuck in love so hopelessly. But even with my best excuse, I can't convince myself that you were good for more than cheap thrills. I need to leave you, but I never will. Stuck in love with you. Take a look at what you got me into. The paralyzing truth is living even 1 minute without you is a moment I'd rather not have to live to see. Well, I'm stuck in love. I'm stuck in love so hopelessly.
You can have it all and wrap it in the world. You can have everything. You can have love and lots of other things to make you think. But when it all comes down to you, girl, yeah, no matter what you do, take a look at yourself and realize I've been good to you. I've been good to you. But all you see is it falls.
Listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Leah Morgan Carroll. Thanks, Arena, for that music. We'll hear more in a bit.
Now it's time for parts 3 and 4 of Max's interview with Dan Bigley. The attack is over, and now Dan is trying to figure out what he will do next.
My dog Maya, who I was with my dog Maya and my friend John, and she lets out just a little growl, just enough to make me look up and, you know, what's this? And sure enough, about 30 feet away, my first thought was, you know, how am I doing taking stock and how am I going to get out of here? The thought crossed my mind about, you know, maybe trying to crawl out. But I quickly realized I was in no shape to do that. From my memory, I didn't have much of a capacity to move at all. And I could feel, you know, blood pooling up under my head on the forest floor, and I could feel blood filling in my waders. So I knew I was in bad shape, and really I felt like the only thing I could do was just to lay as still as I could and save every bit of energy for surviving the rescue, which I was hopeful would be coming. So I don't really know how long I waited there, but I would say probably within 20 minutes or so of coming back to consciousness, John, my friend, had connected with a couple of other fishermen, and they made their way to come find me. And immediately when they found me, you know, it was clear things were not good. So John stayed with me. The other two went for help to see if they could get cell phone, a call out for the troopers and whatnot, and to get the EMTs on their way. And it would be about 2 hours before the EMTs would arrive. And during that time, you know, more fishermen started coming to the scene, and it was reported that I was, you know, in and out of consciousness, and that at one point I had even stopped breathing. But shortly before they were going to start compressions, I would sort of gasp for air type of a thing. So I was really in a fine line, a pretty tenuous place there for a while. And it's funny, you know, the things that that I was reported to be saying, you know, it really makes a lot of sense on some level, but it's just interesting the things you think about in those situations. You know, one thing I kept saying, which was kind of obvious thinking back, which was, you know, how come I can hear you but I can't see you? How come I can hear you but I can't see you? And nobody had any answers for me for that question. Although, you know, yeah, it might have been pretty obvious to some of them. And then I also kept saying, oh man, is my girlfriend going to kill me? which is funny, you know, for several reasons, the least of which is that I really just started, you know, dating her the night before. So probably wouldn't have been calling her my girlfriend in many circumstances. So it's kind of funny. But the other thing I kept thinking about is that I had the keys to the company van in my pocket, and I knew there was a field trip the next day for a group of teens that I worked with. And I kept thinking, man, how are they going to get these kids there? Like, I've really blown it this time.
I mean, they excused you, right?
Of course.
Best excuse ever.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know, I was in a really bad way. Not only had, you know, my face experienced a lot of damages, you know, pretty much every bone in my head except for my lower mandible had been broken, and including the palate or the bone structure that holds the brain up into place had been broken, or even in many cases pulverized, you know, powdered. And so the brain itself herniated down into my sinuses. The sac that holds it was torn open in several places, so I was leaking cerebral spinal fluid for the next 10 days. And really, aside from the huge risk of that the trauma presented, then it was an even greater risk almost of than dying from infection. And so the doctors really weren't optimistic when they started working on me. They couldn't begin to reconstruct yet because the swelling and the damages were just too great. The first thing that they needed to do was to basically close everything up, load me full of antibiotics, and hope that I could make it through the next 10 days without a lethal infection. And so, you know, during that time, as my family started to arrive from Lower 48, and my friends would come in, you know, the doctors were pretty straight with them. They were just saying, you know, this is devastating, and it's most likely that, you know, we won't be able to restore any sight if he lives, but he's certainly not out of the woods. And their message was, frank, it was, if you're the type of people that pray, now is the time to pray. I emerged approximately five surgeries later, 6 months later, finally all put back together. The last stubborn wound, which kept reopening on my forehead, finally replaced with the piece of my arm. And then at that point, it became about, okay, now that I'm going to live, how do I go about living as a blind person, you know? And really starting that adventure, for lack of better words, the adventure of trying to get out of bed on your own and find the bathroom, how to cook for yourself, clean for yourself, how to, you know, use computers to read for you, you know, all that stuff that I had really taken for granted for the first 25 years of my life.
Now, I'm sorry, but just to backtrack a second, you said that now that I'm going to live, which means at some point, you know, I think you were conscious of the fact that you might not.
Right.
So very then so. Was there, I guess when you were aware of the fact that you might not live, do you bother making plans? What is your mindset now?
Right. Pretty much, you know, for me during that time of uncertainty, it was just about survival mode. Like, you know, you definitely didn't make plans. And in fact, you didn't really think beyond the moment, or at least I didn't. And certainly not beyond the day. I mean, but pretty much it was just a moment to moment thing. Just really being very mindful about, the use of your energy and trying to stay positive and really just cope with the physical pain and so really the emotional pieces weren't even present, you know, as far as like starting to grieve the loss and or deal with emotional pain, that really wasn't even a factor at that point in time, because that would come later after getting out of survival mode. And every now and then it would sort of catch up with me a little too much and I would cry or, you know, feel sad or whatever. But for the most part, all that emotional stuff would come much later.
You're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Leah Morgan Carroll. We just heard part 3 and 4 of Max Young Rice's interview with Dan Bigley.
Thanks, Max, for the very intriguing interview. Well done, sir. For more information on Dan Bigley, you can visit danbigley.com. It's about time we share some events.
The last day of Alaska Teen Media Institute's video club at the Teen Underground in the Public Library is Tuesday from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. It's an opportunity to hang out and make great films with other Anchorage teens. The club will resume again in September. For more on that, email news@alaskateenmedia.org.
Or you could join Brave New Alaskan Voices Wednesday, July 31st for their send-off poetry slam. They are preparing to represent Alaska at the Brave New Voices International Poetry Festival in Chicago this August. The event takes place at the Music Cafe in the Old Holiday Inn downtown. The event is free, doors open at 6 p.m., and the show starts at 7.
On Friday, August 6th, enjoy some First Friday festivities at the Anchorage Museum. Art Swaporama, create art and swap it with another person. Free museum admission from 6 to 9 p.m.
And if you're looking for a job but aren't sure how to write a resume, come to a free resume writing class at the Public Library Tuesday, August 20th at 6 p.m. and learn how to write a winning resume. Get great job seeking tips too.
Last on our list, don't forget that youth ride the Anchorage People Mover buses for free on Thursdays. So get off the couch and explore the city.
I'm Teddy Shangin, and you're listening to In Other News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. And now is the final part of Max Young Rice's interview with Dan Bigley. Dan's reflecting on the Bear Attack and thinking about what he'll do later on in life.
You know, as I was saying, it sort of puts things into perspective. So I had thoughts about, you know, geez, I almost died without having kids. I almost died without really ever having that love of marriage, you know, that love of your life type of experience. There was so much that I felt like I really wanted to have in life, but came so close to not having any of those opportunities. And of course, at this point, I didn't know how many of those opportunities would still be there because I had no idea what life would be like, or certainly what life as a blind person would be like. It was really then that I began to really kind of reflect on what had happened to my life, you know, what had happened from this day where everything had been going so well. And now here I was, you know, just a couple months or a month and some weeks later, and everything was completely up in the air as far as I had no idea what my life would have for me. And I began sort of feeling around on my face, and, you know, it was still totally covered in antibiotic ointments and stuff, but I began to sort of explore with my fingertips, you know, the damage that had been done. You know, at that time, my head and face were still super swollen, and so it felt very odd and awkward. I would have those types of experiences where I was challenged to the very core of my being, and all of my self-identity had been sort of stripped away, that I still had really good friends surrounding me.
So it sounds like you made this important decision to basically go for life and figure out what to do. And a lot of it's because of Amber. Where is she during that time after the bear and before you go down to California?
You know, Amber comes to see me for the first time since being asked to leave. And it's her first time seeing me when I'm awake, you know. I'm sitting up next to the bed in this chair, and I'm not speaking at the time, and so I'm communicating via this dry erase board, and she sits down at my knees on the floor with sort of her hand on my knees, and I write down the words. I say, I'm blind. And she's like, yeah, I know. I'm sorry, you know. And I write down the words. I say, crazy. And she's like, yeah, it's super crazy. And then I sort of erase, you know, with my rag, the whiteboard, and I scribble down the words, I'm scared, you know. And she's like, yeah, no. Amber continued to hang around just sort of as a friend until it was time for me to go to California to continue those surgeries. And as I, you know, mentioned earlier, we then reconnected sort of over the telephone, which eventually then drew us back together. And it was a year later when I planned my first trip back up to Alaska since blindness. It was in June, and I planned a trip to come up and spend some time with Amber and do some fishing, get back out on the river. We drive back up to her place, her cabin up in Bear Valley, and we're sitting there at first very awkwardly, being in the same room. We, you know, we had not much time together before the bear, and not much time together, me as a blind person, in person, lots of time on the phone. And so it was kind of awkward at first. And, you know, we still weren't totally sure who we were. But once again, we ended up having one of those just remarkable nights that together of really connection that moved us from, you know, friendship status to relationship status, you know, to together. Once again, I woke up the next morning with plans to go fishing with John and with Jaha. So I said, you know, hey, honey, I'm going fishing. I'll call you when I get back, you know, just as I had the previous year. It was this strange sort of deja vu and or second chance, if you will. And I went fishing and proud that not only did I keep that promise to call her that night after fishing, but that I was able to call her and tell her I'd caught a 40-pound king. So It was a real victory lap, as I now refer to it as, in the sense that I got to come back to Alaska, catch the fish, keep the fish, and get the girl.
Dan and Amber were married 3 years after the attack. I interviewed Dan for more than an hour at his home in Anchorage. While I was there, I got to meet his son, Alden, and his daughter, Acacia, and his wife, Amber. And they were having a gathering after our interview, so as I was getting ready to go, more and more friends kept showing up. It struck me that when I was interviewing him, we spent so much time talking about when he had been alone and when he had been fighting for his life all by himself. And now here he was, surrounded by all these people. Dan has a book out now. It's called Beyond the Bear. If you want to learn more, you can just go to danbigley.com. That's Dan Bigley, BIGLEY.com.
You're listening to Another News, a production of the Alaska Teen Media Institute on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. I'm Leah Morgan Carroll. You just heard a story by Max Young Rice.
Now we will be sharing an interview by my co-host, Leah Morgan Carroll, about human trafficking.
Could each of you introduce yourself and tell us a little about where you work and what your job is?
My name is Josh Lowers. I'm the Outreach Program Coordinator here at Covenant House, and so my job is to head up the outreach team, and we do a number of things, but kind of our primary role is to be out on the street, letting youth know about what services we offer and building relationships and getting them connected and being a support.
And my name is Heidi Carson, and I'm the program coordinator of our community service center with Covenant House, and I've been with Covenant House for about 11 years now in a variety of capacities. I've worked in the shelter before, I've worked as an outreach worker, a peer outreach worker, and now the program coordinator for this center.
How does your work involve the issue of human trafficking?
We deal with a lot of youth that are in their most desperate time of need. They're homeless and at risk, and they are all very, very young, you know, 13 to early 20s. And we find it takes about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, for them to first be approached on the street by people with the intention of trafficking for commercial sex trafficking.
Yeah, so I mean, we're out on the street 5 nights a week. And we're trying to meet youth in essence. I mean, we're out there with the pimps, with the traffickers. And mm-hmm. So we're coming, offering kind of a place to stay, food and shelter. But oftentimes the traffickers are also offering those same things. And so the reason we're out there is because what we bring brings life at the end of that. And what those guys bring is just heartache and pain and struggle. And so, but we see youth all the time. I can think of 10 people off the top of my head right now that I know are being trafficked in some way. And so we're building relationships to try to help them either get out of that life or take steps away from that life. But we definitely, it's a vulnerable population. Anytime there's a vulnerable population, you're going to find folks that are going to try and take advantage of them. And that's who we work with.
And a lot of the youth that we run into are being trafficked, and they're not even aware that it's trafficking. What we've experienced a lot is a phenomenon known as tundra pimping. And what that means is traffickers here in the city will get a girl of a lot, and it's usually girls, so that's, I'm going to speak primarily about females, but they'll get a girl probably new to town, doesn't really know anybody. They kind of pick her up. They start this relationship with her like they're her boyfriend or something like that, treat her really good, you know, pay for clothes and you know, keep her comfortable and take her out to dinner and things that she may not have ever experienced. And they kind of groom her, and then they start making her have sex with his friends, and then it kind of goes on from there. And then what he does essentially is removes all what she sees as availability to get out of that. So he takes her ID, he cuts off ties with her family, she can't use the computer. That's what the traffickers are looking for. Naive Alaska Native females that they can get that aren't familiar with the city, that don't understand their resources.
They're easy to spot. You know the newbies, like, within a second, because they're bright-eyed, they're bushy-tailed. Mm-hmm. And
usually new clothes, yeah. They look really good, they're really excited.
And so the traffickers have, they don't have to work too hard to identify some of the new folks on the street.
It's not going to be some sketchy guy in the trench coat that's going to come and approach you on the street, and he's going to be like, hey, little girl, come with me. The scenario is not like that. The scenario is going to be some you know, probably really hot guy who's going to be like, hey, you want to come to dinner with me? And you're going to think it's a dating situation. And he's going to pull you out and pretty soon like, oh, you don't need to stay at Covenant House. You can come home with me. I'll take care of you. And then it becomes this situation where they can't get out of it. So it's so easy to get into because this is one of their peers. This is somebody who might be just a little bit older than but not much. So that's kind of where the trap is.
Yeah. Well, it's really just being intentional about who you receive things from and where you go with people. You know, I mean, if you don't know somebody, be careful because you don't know them, you know. And, I mean, people offering free things or, just be really intentional about who you spend your time with and what you receive and where you go with folks that you don't know.
And then Covenant House in general works really closely with law enforcement in picking out people that we think are potential traffickers or even just individuals that might be out to do harm, dealers or any of that sort. So we recognize through outreach, the youth bring it up to us and say, hey, you know, this person's really shady, look out for them. And then law enforcement, we share that information too. I would say that it's really, really underreported, especially for boys and men. Girls and young women, you know, they don't understand that they were trafficked. They just think that their boyfriend made them do things. Brainwashed to believe that this is all that they are there for. This is all that they can do. This is what he's telling them. He'll even make them say that they like it, that they want to do it. And for a while, some of them believe that. And it isn't until a lot of therapeutic interventions that come to pass that they genuinely come to the understanding that, you know, they were the victim in this case. Our suggestion for parents is to pay attention to what your youth at home are doing on Facebook and social networking sites, because what we find is that is the new way that youth get drawn into this life, into being trafficked. And we've noticed a lot of youth getting set up, so to speak, on Facebook to meet somebody they think is their age in the transit center or somewhere else like that, some public location, and then they end up getting swept into this. And we are seeing that a lot. So pay attention to your kids' Facebook activities.
And again, just like on the street, if you don't know somebody, don't give them your information. Don't friend them. Don't go someplace where they want you to go. I mean, it's in that sense, it's kind of a common sense thing of saying.
I don't know.
I'm Teddy Shangin, and you just heard an interview about human trafficking with John Lowers and Heidi Carson from Covenant House. What got you interested in this topic, Leah?
Well, there are many reasons as to why I became interested in this subject, but the biggest reason is that not enough people are aware what human trafficking is. Not only do some people not understand what human trafficking is, but that it happens in Alaska and it happens today all over the world.
Thanks again, Leah. That's an important topic to bring to people's attention. Well, today we're going to end the show with a song. I'd like to thank my co-host, Leah Morgan Carroll, our board op, Tiana Johnson, and our reporter, Max Young Rice. We'd also like to thank Spirit of Youth, the Alaska team, Division of Behavioral Health, and the Rasmussen Foundation.
We can't forget to thank our DJ, Arena Filipenko. If you would like to make great stories as well, join ATMI, find us online, and listen to past stories at alaskateenmedia.org or call us at 272-2864. While you're at it, remember to check out KPASA, Anchorage Events page on Facebook. It's the best place to find local events. Don't forget to tune in to the next broadcast of In Other News on Saturday, August 31st at 4 p.m. right here on KNBA 90.3 FM Anchorage. Bye!